In a stadium rich with tradition, the lights shine the brightest. This is The Camp. Now, here's your host, Zach Heilprin, on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Radio Network.
Yes, welcome in. It's officially March, which means it's officially the month that spring practice starts. Everything, I feel like we've been waiting now for 2 months, all since this stuff really started gaining steam with all the transfers and some of the other exciting stuff around the program. It's all going to be leading up to spring ball getting going March 25th. It is March now. Obviously, this month usually belongs to college basketball. We'll see if that ends up being the case for Wisconsin or not. That remains to be seen. Feels unlikely, but you never know. Every time I say something's unlikely on this show, it ends up happening. So you're welcome if the Badgers make the tournament. Jesse, we got, going back to earlier this week, we got an opportunity to chat with a couple of assistant coaches, Devin Spaulding, the new running backs coach, and Paul Haynes, the new cornerbacks coach. We'll get to Paul Haynes in a second, but I know you wrote about Devin Spaulding. He's got a room that's interesting. Obviously, at the top, you got two guys that have some experience with Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi, and then there's a lot of unknown after that, but it was still a no-brainer for him to come from Youngstown State. He said he sprinted to Wisconsin to become the new running backs coach. I think that was for a number of reasons, but also, I mean, hell, it's Wisconsin and it's running backs and it's, you're a young guy. Not too many guys get this opportunity at his age. And so for a lot of reasons, it makes sense.
He's 27 years old. So he's the youngest assistant on Luke Fickell's 10-person staff. And I wrote about this. And what I said was he's quickly ascended to one of the premier position coaching jobs in the FBS. I really don't think there's any dispute about that based on the history of the running backs at Wisconsin. Even if running backs might be utilized in a little different way in this new offense, if you have this opportunity and you've got a few years under your belt at a place like Youngstown State and a chance to reunite with Luke Fickell, then this is kind of a dream scenario for somebody who's still kind of learning the ropes of coaching. And obviously he's been tremendously impressive in a short period of time, but he shared a little bit about his story and how he even got into this position. He was a running back, and in his senior year, he played wide receiver at Central Michigan. His last year in college was 2018. And it's kind of funny how it's a small world in this profession, but his mentor and his initial running backs coach at Central Michigan was Gino Gadugli, who obviously was very briefly at Wisconsin. But Spaulding was considering what to do afterward, and he wanted to pursue a NFL career like a lot of players aspire to do. And his mentor basically told him, you could do that, and a couple years later, if you make it and you get hurt, you're going to be behind the eight ball if you want to pursue a career in coaching. And I think you've got something special here. And so obviously Spaulding chose to listen to Gadugli and took a graduate assistant role under Luke Fickell at Cincinnati in 2019. And that allowed him to springboard into a full-time role as the running backs coach at Youngstown State, and also allowed him to come back and work with Fickell again at Wisconsin. So it seems like he's got a lot of energy. Obviously, he's got experience coaching the position, which I think we should emphasize seems like a pretty important thing that you should be required of coaching running backs for the Badgers. And now we'll see how it all comes together. Because as you said, March 25th is the first spring practice.
So he's got it's a good position to walk into, right? Like obviously running back room at the University of Wisconsin. I get that. It's, and especially at the top, when you have two guys that have the experience like Braylon and like Ches, I think Braylon is certainly probably looking for some, looking for a way to get an extra little bit of a edge up or a leg up, I should say, and being able to take his game to the next level and get to the NFL next year. So he's got two of those guys to work with. The rest of the room though, Jesse, is a little bit of an unknown, and there's just a ton of young guys. Now some have played, right? We saw Jackson Aker get playing time last year. Julius Davis has been here a while. Katie Acabelli has not played, and obviously they'll have a new guy, Nate White, coming in later on. I believe Bray Shipper is still there. So, I mean, there are some guys that have played, but it's really a young room. So I kind of feel like he's got a bit of a challenge in building it up a little bit here.
Yeah, I think this is a really important year to lay the foundation for the future of the running back room, because if Braylon performs the way that he believes he can, that Luke Fickell has talked about he believes he can, then the goal is to go to the NFL after his junior season. Chez is obviously a fifth-year senior, and you're going to need some reinforcements, and you're going to have to be really good in that room because that's what Wisconsin typically is. And there's a lot of question marks, to your point. And Julius Davis has been here a long time. He's going to be a fifth-year senior. He's got 35 career carries for 200 yards as a reserve. He's got an opportunity to be the number three this year. But again, that's a fifth-year senior guy. So I'll be very interested to see how they divide reps. And we should mention, and this has been a running theme here when we've talked to the assistant coaches, we get two assistant coaches a week leading up to spring practice, which is good for us because we've never met them at all. Or talk to them, they don't know that much about what they have to work with. I mean, they've met them in person, they've watched film, but no one's really saying much about how they plan to utilize anybody until they get to spring practice. So Spalding said that it's premature now to talk about how he would divide reps between Braylon and Chez, and certainly premature to talk about who the potential number three running back could be. But since it's a relatively small room, those are the options that they've got, and I don't know what the right answer is at this time. I also wonder, to be honest, Zach, how many carries is the number three running back going to get when you've got Braylon and Chez in there, assuming those two are healthy, and that's certainly been an issue the last 2 years. But that may also have to do with what exactly this offense looks like and how often you want to rotate guys. There's so many questions that we look forward to gaining answers to in spring practice.
Well, that was my question was going to be to you, is how important is a third running back? We don't know that for sure, but just based on those two guys' injury history, and that's not a knock on them at all. Certainly the Chez has just kind of been snake bitten with a couple of rough injuries these last 2 years. Braylon, I think, is just a matter of workload and banging into 8-man boxes for two straight seasons. But for you, do you think a third running back matters at this point? Again, we don't have an answer to it, just an opinion how important that third running back spot is.
I think it matters a little. It matters far more, obviously, if one of those top two guys gets hurt. And that's to me why it's so important to try to figure out who you've got and who you can trust. I don't know how much there's going to be a rotation with a number three running back simply because of how talented Allen and Malusi are. But Malusi has missed 8 games the last 2 seasons. As you said, snake bitten, but he tore his ACL in 2021 in that game against Rutgers, missed the rest of the year, suffered the broken wrist, missed 4 games this past season. And Braylon has just had he's such a physical running back. And as we've laid out, constantly facing 8+ man boxes. I mentioned this in the story this week, but there was only one running back in the country, Air Force running back Brad Roberts, who runs and is in an offense that utilizes the triple option, that faced more 8+ man boxes on rushing attempts than Braylon Allen. So that's going to be a little different this year. And maybe that will help as much as anything to keep him fresh. But I think it's important to find a number three. But if those top two are healthy, they're going to get, I don't know that I'll say 100% of the carries, but pretty darn close, because you want the ball in the hands of those top two playmakers. Those two are arguably, I mean, they've got to be considered among the best in the Big Ten, if not the country, if they're playing at their potential as a tandem.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I had to do Kenny and Heilprin by myself this week, the earlier show this week. But I brought on Colton Bartholomew, and we were doing bold predictions for spring. And in one of his bold predictions was Jackson Akers is going to be the number three running back. I don't hate it. I kind of actually like it because he was a very good running back in high school, was forced into being a fullback because of his body type and because of the need for it. What do you think about the possibility of Jackson Aker grabbing that number three spot, considering the lack of potential other options? And just because when he got the ball in his hands last year, looked pretty good. Not a ton of running, obviously, but getting the ball in his hands in the passing game.
I think that's not a bad prediction at all. My early favorite would be Julius, just because he's got the most experience. On the other hand, he hasn't really been able to break through. And granted, there's been some talented running backs ahead of him, but Jackson is a younger guy. So if you get somebody in that can learn this system, he could be positioned for the next couple of years to at least be a contributor in some capacity. He's clearly got some versatility, can play fullback. And in the past, they put their fullbacks in different positions. And as you said, has experience playing running back, and as a true freshman, got some reps at running back. His very first touch at Wisconsin was a touchdown. So those would probably be the top two. And again, it's there's not a ton of bodies in that room. So I think that's fair.
I'm kind of intrigued, though, with Cade Iacomelli, just based on, and again, I know there are some that don't want to read too much into the need for speed tweets from Brady Collins and don't want to focus on that. And I can respect that. That said, Cade's kind of showed up every single week. And so obviously, I mean, Braylon did the first week. And so, but I feel like Cade may give them some speed that they don't really have at the position, at least based on these tweets and basing anything on a tweet, especially like this, not ideal, but I think he may have the athleticism there is at least intriguing for Cade. I remember we talked to him on signing day last year.
Yep.
And it was kind of uncertain where he was going to be. I think Joe Rudolph wanted him at running back, if I remember correctly. Am I remembering that correctly?
I believe that is right, because he could have played three positions. And when he went to a camp, they looked at him for three positions. It was running back, wide receiver, and I think it was safety. So he's the true definition of an athlete. When you recruit somebody, they can do a lot of different things well for their high school team, and you've just got to figure out the right place to put him. So certainly he's going to be in the mix. And I don't know how carries will be distributed in the spring, but this is the time to get as many reps for as many players as you possibly can so you can learn about them, because that's not really what's going to happen in fall camp, especially as you get closer to the season opener.
Yeah, for sure. So that it's an interesting position behind Chez and Braylon. But again, I think a lot of people are looking to Braylon and seeing if there could be a potential step up this year. And I'm sure that's what he's kind of thinking too. And maybe we get back to what he was. Look, he was really good last year. I think it's probably things are a little shaded just because of how the season went and because he didn't necessarily have the huge season that everyone was expecting. I mean, remember we were talking about 2K0, right? Like it was 2,000 yards for number zero last year. That was, I shouldn't say we were talking about, he was talking about it, and that didn't happen. He still had a very solid year, but getting back to running, like kind of what we had seen as a freshman, we didn't see it a ton last year. And I think a lot of that had to do with being banged up. And if he can stay healthy, I would expect a big year from him and Chez. And I don't know about what Javonte Williams and Michael Carter did at NC in 2020, but certainly going to be able to put some numbers up on the ground.
I think there's no question that both those guys are motivated, but Braylon in particular strikes me as a guy who would just do anything this year to dominate. And it's funny because when you look at his overall numbers, they're exceptional for somebody who's just played 2 years at Wisconsin. I mean, he ranks fourth in school history in rushing yards per attempt, 6.03. And the only three who have better numbers, this is for a minimum of 300 carries, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor, James White. That's pretty damn good company. But for Braylon, and he talked about this when we were out at the bowl game, the Guaranteed Rate Bowl at the team's local media day, that he holds himself to such a high standard as an in-state kid who grew up idolizing Melvin Gordon. He said, you know what the guys before you have done. So it's just common nature to try to match that. So when you look at the numbers that he's put up, they've been good. But in comparison to what other Wisconsin running backs have been, it's not even in the same conversation in terms of single season marks. And last year was really challenging for a variety of reasons, but his numbers actually went down a bit from his true freshman year. And his yards per carry average decreased from 6.8 to 5.4. Now, again, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I bring all that up to say that I just think he's incredibly motivated. I think this is the kind of offense that could really help him break through. And I would expect a really big year from him.
Yeah. I always think it's hilarious to go back and look at Melvin Gordon's yards per carry. As you mentioned, he's the all-time leader at Wisconsin. 10.0 as a freshman or as a redshirt freshman, 62 for 621. 7.8 as a sophomore. 206 for 1609 and 7.5 on 343 carries. He had 2,587 yards. Just an insane season for a team that had absolutely no passing game whatsoever. I kind of feel like I'm trying to think of a good comparison to it. I don't think there is, but maybe 2018 Jonathan Taylor, because where Wisconsin's passing game was really lacking in 2018. JT went out and put 2,000 yards up. That's the closest thing to it. But that 2014 season for Melvin Gordon, I think, is the best season individually for any Wisconsin player in history.
Basically, what Braylon's done in 2 years is what Melvin did in one season. And this isn't a bold prediction by any stretch. I don't think Melvin's career yards per carry numbers will ever be touched, ever. So he's number one, 7.79 yards per carry. And Taylor is second, and it's more than a full yard behind, 6.67. It's the further we get away from what Melvin did, I think the more I can appreciate it. In the moment, you knew it was special, but I just don't think that career will ever be duplicated in terms of how consistent he was. And that yards per carry is just unreal, really. It's like Madden stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. And when I think about what happened in 2014, it's not anywhere close to the level that I have for the Ron Dane stuff or anything like that. But Melvin, I know he finished second. He deserved more at the Heisman. He deserved the Heisman for what he did. I know Marcus Mariota, his team went and played in the national championship game, and he had a great season. I kind of felt like it was more of a career award that year for Marcus Mariota. He was great. He put up a ton of touchdowns. But what Melvin did essentially by himself on that offense, along with the offensive line and the blocking that happened, that dude, I mean, Tanner McEvoy was quarterback for half the year, and Joel Stabe Yips was quarterback for half the year. What he did was just remarkable. So kind of feel like he deserved better. And whatever, he didn't get it. It is what it is. So, all right, that was Devin Spaulding. Also talked to cornerbacks coach Paul Haynes. He comes from Minnesota, where I believe he was the cornerbacks coach and co-defensive coordinator. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so he left that to come to Wisconsin to be the cornerbacks coach. Now, we're going to leave out the fact that he probably got – we know he got a pretty significant raise, and we're going to ignore that part of this equation.
Okay.
All right? We're just going to say, gosh, he left – being a co-defensive coordinator and cornerbacks coach to come to Wisconsin to be just a cornerbacks coach. Why would he do that, Jesse? Why would he do that? I mean, it's a rival, leaving one school to come to another, a school that, has such a rich tradition up there in Minnesota. They have won a bunch of national titles. I believe they've won a bunch of Big Ten titles. I know it's been about 55 years since their last one, but, excuse me, 60 something years since their last one, but why would he make that move? Would it have anything to do with relationships with coaches?
This is really, you've teed yourself up here to just say whatever it is you want to say. And Paul Haynes is probably going to be diplomatic in responses to reporters. It makes sense why he'd want to be a part of Luke Fickell's staff. And there was a relationship. There's a lot of different relationships there that he and Luke Fickell went to the same high school many years apart. And he was on the same staff with Mike Tressel back at Michigan State. And that was about all that he said about it, is relationships runs deep with him, and it was very important to him. There's certainly a part where you think what you're saying is also what you're saying about another school, but I'll leave it for you, Zach. This is one of your all-time favorite topics.
I mean, PJ Fleck is not a favorite topic. He is, he's not, but... Because if I didn't have to talk about him ever again, I would be happy about that. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like he's going anywhere, because you can't get Minnesota to the level where people want to come in and steal him yet. He did that 1 year, and unfortunately hasn't. Unfortunately for everybody else, he hasn't been able to do that since. But yeah, we were talking before we went into, or before Paul Haynes got there, and I was joking about the question that I wanted to ask. Was just like, how badly did you want to get away from PJ Fleck? Is that the reason for this move? And obviously, I didn't ask that question. I asked a little bit, probably more professional and courteous question. Just, what went into the decision to leave a rival and, essentially for the same position? And he gave, the answer you're expecting. But in my mind, somewhere, my belief is he wanted to get away from PJ Fleck. But how accurate that is, probably not. But Paul Haynes, the new cornerbacks coach, he takes over a room that has Alexander Smith, Ricardo Hallman, Jason Mitre, and then a lot of guys that have not played at the college level before. or played a lot at the college level before. I think, the thing that he inherits though is pretty special. And Alex Smith, and it feels like, you know, we haven't necessarily heard, you know, these coaches being able to get to learn guys, but I think he's learning who Alex Smith is pretty quickly.
He was talking about how Alex has been the one organizing everything with this group, that there's a text message chain with the cornerbacks that Haynes is on, and Alex is the one who's talking about, I'm in the building at this time. If you want to come over here and work out, or this is what we're going to be doing on this day. And that's what you would expect from a guy who's a six-year senior and commands respect to the room. But he came back for a reason. Obviously, he missed a ton of time last year with an injury, and that left a sour taste. And I expect him to have a really big year. And I think the combination of Smith and Maitre have a chance to be really good at cornerback. And I think we discussed this before, but don't know. There's so many unknowns right now. What exactly does Trestle's 3-3-5 defense look like? But from talking to some of the recruits, that we could see more three safeties on the field. So maybe you see more of Maitre and Smith, because that was another thing that Jim Leonard did. He rotated a ton of defensive backs, and I think Poteet too, obviously, and how they decided to utilize guys. And maybe they'll continue to do that. They certainly have the bodies. But you're right, there are a lot of young guys that need the opportunity. Other than those two, and Max Lofi is probably – Max Lofi and Ricardo Hallman are the two guys that have earned snaps. And there's six guys on the roster that are on scholarship that are either true freshmen or redshirt freshmen. So there's a lot they've got to figure out in that room. But kind of like we were talking about with the running back room, you got a good place at the top to start from. And I think that getting Maitre, a guy from Boston College who has 30 career starts – and is coming in and just understands what it means to be a college player, will be tremendously beneficial for that group.
Thought it was also interesting. He likes to, you know what, he kind of wants to lock guys in at a spot.
Yeah.
Right. Like whether it's the boundary of the field. And because while they, you know, you have to be able to play a bunch of different spots, they do have different responsibilities, and you have to be consistent with where, especially with young guys, consistent and let them learn one spot. And so it's always, and I'm not saying Jim Leonard didn't do that. He did. There were certain guys that played certain spots. Of the young guys, who do you think could step up and push for playing time early? Is it one of the 2023 recruits? Is it guys that are already on campus? Is there, but anybody that sticks out? Obviously they recruited some impressive guys in this class.
My two that stand out are going to be Ricardo Hallman and Avion Jones. And I'm doing another story for early in the next week about the underclassmen. And I'm categorizing underclassmen as redshirt sophomores or younger, because they, by eligibility, even if they're in their third year in the program, guys that I'm really interested to see in spring ball who can make a big leap. And those are two that come to mind in that room, because Hallman earned significant time early in the season and then kind of disappeared as he had some struggles and the staff identified other guys to play. But I think he's going to have a good shot. And Avion Jones got a little bit of time last year, was an early enrollee, and I think he's got some versatility. It's impossible really to say among the 2023 guys who's going to be able to emerge, because again, they haven't actually practiced. We haven't had a chance to see them practice, and some of those guys aren't on campus yet. I mentioned this a couple, maybe a month ago or so, after the February signing period when I did my class of 2023 superlatives. But the most intriguing player to me, maybe of anybody, is Amari Snowden, because of his size. He's 6'3", and he's so athletic, but he's still in high school. And it's awfully difficult, I think, especially if you're not an early enrollee, to come in the summer, try to pick everything up in fall camp and earn yourself a spot in the two deep. Long term, he's the most intriguing to me, but of those guys, and there's eight players on scholarship that are redshirt sophomores or younger in that cornerback room, I'm going with Hallman and Jones.
Yeah, for sure. Of the true freshmen, Amari stands out. The two guys that are already on campus that will have an opportunity to compete here in spring, Jonas Taclona and Jace Arnold.
Yep.
Both guys that have shown up in the need for speed tweets from Brady Collins. So I'm intrigued to see what they look like. I'm intrigued to see what both those guys look like and potentially earning roles in year one. We'll see. All right. So were there any other takeaways from Paul Haynes that you had?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
All right. Let's get into the need for speed. All right. So we're only going to spend like 3 seconds on this. But we have a new leader at the top. Keontez Lewis has taken over as the fastest guy to this point in these. I guess I don't even know how they're.
I know there's a lot of unknowns,
these,
right?
Right. Like, I think it's like 20 yards. I don't know whatever it is. Keontez Lewis posted a new high. It's 21.7, overtaking Will Pauling for 21.35. Keontez Lewis, we saw some speed. I feel like he's got a chance to be a breakout type of guy in this offense just because he's a big, long strider that I think they're going to, they're going to take some shots. We saw it a little bit last year. He's got that ability to get deep. So him running that fast, not a huge surprise. I think we knew he had some speed, but good to see him at the top. I'm still extremely intrigued, however, by Will Pauling. Because when we talked to Chim Ray last week, he mentioned him, and it's not just the speed, it's the quickness. And when I went back and watched a little bit more some of his tape on YouTube, which, take it for what it's worth, I think he's the forgotten guy here. I think he's the forgotten wide receiver they brought in. I think he ends up finding a role, and especially in the slot, because you want a guy like him in the slot who's going to be extremely difficult to deal with in space. And, we heard from Phil Longo in January talking about wanting to get the ball in the hands of their best playmakers and their best athletes. And I think he definitely is that.
You would expect your wide receivers and your skill position guys to be among the fastest, but he's been there consistently. And unlike Quincy Burroughs, who's the other transfer coming in from Cincinnati, Pauling got some significant snaps last year, and he dealt with an injury. And obviously the staff is familiar with him. And I certainly think he'll have an opportunity to make a major impact coming in. Again, so many questions coming into spring ball. We that wide receiver room is tremendously intriguing because you still have your top three guys coming back with DK, Skylar Bell, and then Keontez Lewis. And you've added two players that probably at most places across the country, you would plug them into your two deep, Bryson Green clearly, and CJ Williams. But Williams is unproven as a college player. I mean, Pauling's earned more opportunities. And so I think it's going to be great competition. We haven't even talked about Vinny Anthony, who's another name that's showed up here consistently on the need for speed. In the latest one, he was sixth, and all these guys are running over 20 miles per hour. He didn't catch any passes last year, but they used him and a handful of jet sweeps, and I think he'll have a chance. Now, again, you're not going to use seven or eight wide receivers, but if they do have five or six, that's a pretty big step up from what we've seen in years past, and they've got the quality and the depth and talent, I think.
Yes. I'm just now realizing that Cade Iacomelli's Twitter handle, it says it's C. Iacomelli, but I also kind of feel like it's Sia Camelli. Like, see ya. I'm gone. Okay. You're not going to catch me type of thing. It's not whatsoever. But when I initially saw it, I'm like, oh, that's pretty clever. And then I'm like, nope, that's just his name. all right. So, but he's obviously in the top 10 again here on this need for speed. All right. So we spent more than 15 seconds on it, but, that will do it for that. All right. Big 10, the little Big 10 scheduling format stuff, from your guy, Scott Docterman at The Athletic. The Big Ten held their meetings last week. They're still trying to figure out what this is going to look like with USC and UCLA when they come in. What's pretty clear is the divisions are going away. The scheduling format, they're still trying to figure out the rivals thing, whether it's going to be a flex where it changes or if it's going to be one or two. This is from Gary Barta, who I believe is still the Iowa athletic director.
Yes.
Correct? Is that accurate?
Yes.
Because he hasn't really done his job of late.
Yes, right? He's still the athletic director at Iowa.
All right. Because, Brian Ferentz and Kirk. Yeah. All right. Brian Ferentz is still. Yeah. All right. Either way. So he was the one that Scott talked to, and he mentioned one or two protected rivals. So maybe the three thing isn't going to happen, which I think is probably good because as I said, Iowa, and assuming Wisconsin gets Iowa and Minnesota, it's good. But the going away from divisions, it's seemingly like a lot of people have talked about how the West isn't as good as the East, and that's certainly the case, especially at the top. And I don't think that is going to change. But a lot of people have talked about how Wisconsin, like, this is their best last chance this year, 2023, or their last best chance to win the Big Ten because they get the West and it's not as good and all that good stuff. Wisconsin and Iowa, one of only two teams in the West with winning records against East teams. Now, Wisconsin has not beaten Ohio State since 2010. They haven't beat Penn State, I think, since 2011, though they haven't necessarily played them a ton in this East-West crossover. They've had success against Michigan. I'm wondering, do you think it's as big of a deal going away from divisions as a lot of other people do when it comes to Wisconsin?
As it pertains to Wisconsin, I think it's a deal. I don't know how big of a deal it is. It's clearly going to be more challenging than it's ever been to win a Big Ten championship. You're adding USC and UCLA as of now, and who knows what future expansion may be. I've been reports about the Big Ten interested in pursuing other teams in the Pac-12 down the road, but it's hard because it's not, even in this format, it's not like Wisconsin's going to be playing Ohio State every year or Penn State every year. There's too many teams. You can't do that. On the other hand, look at all these years where you see the Big Ten East and the top two teams are one's undefeated and one's got one loss. There were seasons where if you were on the West side, you didn't have to have a record like that in order to get into the Big Ten championship. And that's not going to be the case. And look, this is probably how it should be. If you're going to play for a Big Ten championship, you better be pretty damn good and not just kind of be slightly above average and be better than some of the teams in your division that aren't great. I think it's going to be harder. There's no question about it. But Wisconsin is trying to position itself to win championships. They're bringing in a staff where that's obviously the stated goal. And if you want to get to the level where you want to be a college football playoff team, then you got to win your conference championship. So it's going to be harder, but frankly, it probably should be harder.
It is going to be harder. The other part of the scheduling is potentially getting every four-year player playing once at every campus. So that will also be part of the schedule. Like a four-year player, if they stay all 4 years, they'll play at every single stadium within the conference. And that has not obviously been the case with Wisconsin, or, you know, I mean, they've played at Penn State once since 2012. They've played certain places like Michigan State. When they went to Michigan State, it was the first time this past year, it's the first time they've been there since 2016. There's a lot of stadiums that where Wisconsin hasn't been a ton. And I think that's a good thing. I do think it's a good thing to be able to get changes up. And it also means trips to USC and UCLA on a regular basis, hopefully in late November. For Wisconsin and people that cover them. So, so that again, the scheduling thing still very much in flux. But the key, according to Scott, was that they've come down on is how do they get the most teams in the college football playoff, and how do they make sure that everyone is playing each other on a regular basis. Those are their two, apparently, their focuses in building this, and we'll see exactly how it looks. All right, so you got a new story coming on Thursday, and that is you're going to be ranking the strength of Wisconsin's position groups. We kind of already talked a little bit about the running back room and the quarterback room, but give us a little bit of a tease on potentially who's one, who's two, and who brings up the rear.
Yeah, so I did this last year too, and I acknowledge that in the end it's a subjective experience here. I tried to base it at least in part on returning production for each position group. So for example, the inside linebackers return 100% of the tackles, which is sort of amazing. The quarterbacks return 3.5% of the passing yards. I think they more than made up for that with the transfer additions. And then I also rated each position group by their 24/7 composite rating out of high school. And if they transferred in, what their transfer rating is, and that can have, there's some difference there because Nick Evers and Braden Locke, for example, 4-star guys out of high school were then rated as 3-star players coming as transfers because they didn't really play as college players. But either way, in the end, it was, how do I feel about what position group is strongest? And that was hard because there's some incredible top end talent, but you might have a number two or a number three that's never played before. So the short answer here is my number one, and we may have some spirited debate about this. I put the offensive line number one in terms of strongest position groups. The returning production was seventh out of the nine position groups that I had, and that's based on the number of starts that were coming back. But the talent level is first, because we all know how many four and five star guys there are. But I based it on, you've got five guys that have combined to start 66 career games, including 45 last season. And that doesn't even include the two Cincinnati transfers they got with Jake Renfro and Joe Huber, who have 32 career starts. Renfro's coming in right away to take Joe Tippmann's spot. So I put that group at number one. And at number two, I have quarterback. And honestly, I debated whether to put quarterback number one. In the end, I didn't, because I'd be basing it primarily on Tanner Mordecai and everything that he did. But there's no position group that upgraded more than quarterback. So that's my 1-2. My number nine, which is what I have last. And the reason I don't have 10 is because I combined defensive backs. I didn't do safety and corner because I just felt like some of those guys are interchangeable. In the end, I have defensive line at number nine, and I have tight end at number eight. And I flipped those in the end. Initially, I had tight end last. And the reason that I did that is mostly because Wisconsin lost Keanu Benton, which, as we know, is his significance up front the last 4 years was substantial. So there's a lot of questions for me about who's going to fill the nose guard role, and also just becoming more impact players on the defensive line in general. Isaiah Mullins has been around for a long time, was hurt last year, but I think he can be more impactful. And same with Rodus Johnson and James Thompson Jr. I think they can be, but there's a lot of questions for me there. So it was hard, I'll be honest, to try and rank these groups what their strengths are. But my overall takeaway is that there's a lot of talent here, both offensively and defensively. And I think that this Wisconsin team in year one of the Luke Fickell era has a chance to be really, really good.
If I had to, I mean, if you had not separated the defensive backs, I think corners could be down there just because you have Alexander Smith, but you don't really know what else is there. So that was kind of a cop out on your part, but
it was a little bit. That's a totally fair. I actually had the DBs like eighth and moved them up to sixth. And I did it because I'm looking and I'm thinking, well, geez, if I got the safeties in here, you've got Hunter Waller, Kamoi Latu, and you've got Travion Blaylock coming back. So you're right. If I had separated them out, corners might be last, because you'd have two guys that you knew what you had, presumably, and the rest were question marks.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I was forced to do this, which I'm not, you did it for me. So I'd put the tight ends ninth. I mean, we don't know what Clay Cundiff is going to look like. Again, we thought we saw something good from him at the beginning of last year. How exactly did the tight ends work in this offense? Some of these guys are no longer just going to be bonus offensive linemen, right? Jack Aschenbach coming back gives them, I guess, a little bit of something, but there's a lot to figure out at that spot. And I think there's a lot less to figure out at defensive line. You mentioned Keanu Benton. And I totally agree in terms of when you took him off the field, things looked not so great for Wisconsin in trying to stop the run. So that certainly is, but the return, I mean, when you have as much returning experience in Rodus Johnson and James Thompson Jr. and Mullins and some of those three guys, along with what you believe you potentially have in Kurt Neal, I would rank them above the tight ends. But I get where you're coming from with that.
I may be taken to task for this when it comes out. Again, it's purely subjective, but I had your thought process initially too, and I just thought, okay, Eschenbach, Rucci, and Cundiff, and if Cundiff is healthy. He barely played last year. He still finished fifth on the team in receiving yards and fourth in touchdown catches. And just, it's speculation. It's like, okay, well, what do I think I know about Phil Longo's offense? He had three good tight ends last year at North Carolina. They did a lot of damage. And it's also probably some bias too, right? Like, okay, we feel like this offense has a chance to be super explosive. And so maybe I'm leaning in that direction, thinking that they're going to have the ball in their hands more. But I don't disagree with your assessment at all. And maybe the readers will think the same way. We'll see.
And also the offensive line, have we not, again,
every year, number one.
but we've talked about how they haven't lived up to to what they're supposed to be. Exactly. It's hard for me to sit there and say, yep, that's the top unit. They have the most guys, right? So they have the most guys and they have the most talent on paper of any group on the roster, just because based on how Wisconsin has recruited the position.
Right.
I feel like that's a little bit, I'm not going to speak for you, but I feel like that maybe is that turning your judgment just a little bit, influencing your judgment just a little bit, because what we've seen in recruiting rankings has not necessarily always played out on the field. They lose their best player in Joe Tippmann. I love the talent there. One of my other bold predictions was Joe Brunner jumping up and grabbing one of the guard spots. I think he's going to be one of the guard. And I think Tanner Bordellini will be the other. But jumping like so, there's a ton of talent there, but I don't necessarily think it's lived up to it. Whereas the production at quarterback, even though it hasn't been at Wisconsin, certainly has been more productive than what the offensive line has been, at least at the top. And then with Tanner Mordecai, and then you have a kind of like the offensive line, you have a lot of recruiting talent behind the top guy at quarterback.
That's the challenge in putting something like this together. And I even have a sentence in there that Wisconsin's offensive line hasn't been as dominant as some of the best units in recent program history, but the talent and the depth appear there. And we've said that the last couple of years. I'm pretty sure I had the offensive line ranked number one last year. And it's in part a challenge because, to your point, there's 13 scholarship offensive linemen. Okay. There's way more bodies there. And they're so it makes sense why you've got more guys with playing experience. I didn't want to base it entirely on, and I think I said this before, the fact you have Tanner Mordecai, although maybe I should, because he's presumably going to be taking all the snaps. I was trying to look at the overall kind of body of that position group, and there's a lot of talent in the quarterback room, and yet Braden Locke never threw a college pass, and Nick Evers threw one college pass. So it is in part based on potential and what you think could happen, but no doubt about it that the offensive line hasn't been as good as it should be, and maybe this is a year where they start to put it together, and maybe the couple of transfers that they got are going to be play a big part in helping Wisconsin get there. I feel like I'm a broken record saying that there's so many questions for spring ball, but what does the offensive line look like? Who's playing where? How exactly are they going to be responsible for blocking? What does the offense look like in general? I don't know. I don't have all these answers, but right now, that was just kind of my general feeling. But if you're debating between those two positions, I think you're in a good spot offensively, because it means you got a lot of talent.
Yeah, the other spot that we talked about before we came on the air, and this is kind of where it comes down to the whole group,
right,
as opposed to just the top two, is running back. Like, having running backs behind the wide receiver room. The wide receiver room has 13 guys in it.
Yep.
The running back room has six, two of which have played.
Yep.
I'm taking the top two at running back and Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi over the top two in the wide receiver room, but maybe just based on production, based on what they've done in their careers, but the room as a whole is what you're saying is better.
Yeah, that was, again, another challenge here. I have the wide receivers at number three and the running backs at number four. And I did that in part because, okay, you've got your top three receivers coming back that put up good numbers, but you're adding Bryson Green, who, I don't know, he may end up being the number one wide receiver this year. I don't know. CJ Williams and all these other guys that have the potential to play. We talked about Will Pauling. So some of it isn't fair because there are more bodies, but I said before, Braylon and Ches, they may end up being the best tandem in the Big Ten. And after that, I have no idea. You got a bunch of guys who not really done anything. And I think that swayed me a little bit here. But I mean, think about the top four: O-line, quarterback, wide receiver, running back. You can debate it. Those are all offensive position groups. I didn't even go defense until number five at inside linebacker, which I did because, again, every single tackle is back, including your two leading tacklers. So some of this may be just biased and skewed because offense is more exciting, but I think it says a lot about what's possible offensively.
It does. It always does until they take the field. And then, but I feel, because we do this every year, and then it always is like, eh. But this year is, but this year is different, right? Like, this year, because this isn't Paul Chryst, this isn't Joe Ruff, this isn't Bobby Engram, this is Phil Longo, this is a new look offense that we would expect to actually come through with kind of what we're talking about. We'll see if that happens. We don't know. We get to see it here in a couple weeks or 3 weeks, or I should say hopefully we get to see it here in 3 weeks, and then maybe we'll have a little bit better idea and we can go into the off season with a better picture of what all this is going to look like. But this feels like a normal off season conversation, and I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. Anything else? Did you want to give us a full rundown? We'll let that be the tease and people can check it out tomorrow.
Yeah, we pretty much covered it all. But if there's anything left that hasn't been covered, feel free to check it out on The Athletic.
All right. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right. There he is, Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.